Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Meat and Three is Heritage Radio Network's weekly food news roundup. This week on Meat and Three, we're bringing you highlights from Feast Portland, like our chat with the one and only Andrew Zimmern.
I'm super excited to be here because for people who do what I do for a living, we do tons of, you know, desk side chats and podcasts and interviews and stuff like that. And you circle the handful of ones in a year where you get to talk with people that you're really excited about talking with. So this is awesome.
We picked up on some recurring themes while talking to our impressive roster of guests, including the current state of Portland's food scene, personal identity, and believe it or not, the influence of great chefs' grandmothers.
Meemaw never touched a drop of booze in her life and now has a distillery named after her. But I grew up in her garden and just really, she taught me all good things come from scratch and women can be anyone they want to be.
So tune in for this week's extra special episode. Subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. I'm Amanda Dell.
I'm Kimberly Chow.
We are the hosts of Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair, as well as the co-directors of Food Book Fair. Food Book Fair is a festival of writing about eating. We do events in New York and Los Angeles, and hopefully other cities in the future.
And we are happy to be in the studio today with Jeremiah Stone and Fabian Van Hask, the chefs and owners of Contra Wild Air, partners in Una Pizza Napolitana, and the brand new authors of the forthcoming beautiful cookbook, A Very Serious Cookbook, coming out next month.
It's extremely serious. Everything we will discuss on this podcast will have no jokes today.
We're going to talk to you, and we're going to talk to them all about the secrets to their successful relationship and work partnership, what they're reading, watching, and listening to, and what they're cooking, what they're eating, what they're going to be doing on book tour. But first, Amanda, what are you consuming? What are you reading? What are you watching?
I am going to share a rare, for myself, musical recommendation.
Okay.
I, over the past weekend, got into a little bit of an Instagram wormhole, I'll call it. And I saw that a couple weeks ago at Surf Lodge on like the Sunday night series, Wyclef performed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have like a personal fan of Wyclef for a couple of reasons, but also he is from
Amanda Dell?
Yeah.
Wyclef?
He's from he's.
You guys went to the same high school.
I don't know if he actually went to my high school, but he is from that area and is always talked about it, and so I have that connection with him. And then also I just remembered how much I used to listen to the Carnival album in college and post-college, and so I found that on my Spotify. Please sponsor me, I'm sick of getting your charges. But I found it on Spotify, and I think what I love about that album is like he has so many collaborators on it. Like Lauryn Hill is on it, John Forte, like other people that were kind of also more popular at that time.
Mm-hmm.
What I really love about that is it's an album you can listen to from start to finish. It has like really fast songs. It has slow songs. It has like hits like Gone Till November. So I spent some time listening to that and I really enjoyed it.
One of my first CDs that I ever bought was Wyclef Two Sides to a Book.
Okay.
Which is the album that came out after that one.
Mm. Yeah.
But
yeah. It's back
New
in
York,
my
New Jersey superstar.
Exactly. It's back in my rotation. And then I also watched the RBG documentary, Mind Blown. Like
the notorious Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Notorious RBG.
Tell us about it.
Well, she really strikes a balance between like being such having achieved such an incredible amount, but being so matter of fact about it. Mm-hmm. Like she was one of the only women like in her law school class. And like, she doesn't really remark on that. And she just she also went to law school when she had a child. Like she just kind of, I think is really like proud of what she has done and is doing and takes it incredibly seriously, but doesn't kind of get bogged down in that. And she has a very like lawyerly brain in the sense that I think when she tries to react and present her dissents like with kind of without the amount of emotion that I think other people would put into it. So I think it's just, you know, her story. I mean, she works out 5 days a week.
I've seen pictures
and,
of her working.
You know,
out.
She's just basically like, I can't die, or we're totally fucked. So I think she knows that, and I think she does everything in her power to like stay healthy. She just has an unbelievable work ethic that is shown in the film. Mm. Like after she's in her chambers, like she goes back and works like hours into the night. Like people are calling her like, are you coming home for dinner? Like, where are you? So I would, it's really inspirational. Mm. So watch it if you can.
Will do. Where can we find it?
You can find it in the theaters. You can buy it on iTunes.
Okay.
You might have to wait a little bit longer for other streaming services.
Widely distributed, though, at this moment.
Yes.
Cool. We'll check it out. I will check it out.
Yeah. So what is your recommend?
My recommendation this week is I started reading The Leavers, which is a novel by Lisa Coe, which is about a kid growing up in the Bronx from not that long ago, who is the son of an undocumented Chinese immigrant. His mom, who works in a nail salon, goes missing, and his life sort of unravels from there. He's adopted by a white couple. He takes on this other name. People in his life keep changing or leaving, from what I understand from just reading this. And that's not a spoiler because that's the setup. But I was put onto it by Lisa Coe herself, who's an incredible writer. I've read like 60 pages of it just riding the subway, especially thankful to the delays due to the rain so I could get into this book. But she was reading at Tables of Contents, which is our friends at Egg Restaurant's author reading series, where they pair different authors' reading with snacks inspired by the book. So it talks a lot about Deming and Michael, his cousin or his pseudo cousin. They grow up together. Their parents are migrant folks who live here, and I'm just, oh, okay. Someone's really moved in the booth. I'm trying to react to this. So their parents all live together in a crowded apartment. The kids are often left alone. They're latchkey kids, and they make their own meals. And one of the meals was ramen noodles with ketchup broth, American cheese, and hot sauce. So Evan hands her, the chef at Egg, as an interpretation of what he was inspired by from this passage that Lisa wrote and read. He made ramen with ketchup, but also like pasteurized chicken bones that he made the stock out of. But the, you know, American cheese was like lovingly melted over the top.
Wow. Can we look for any photos of this? Maybe at Egg Restaurant?
You might want to look on their Instagram.
Okay.
I think the lighting at night in that restaurant, I love you guys. The lighting there at night combined with the colors of ketchup with American cheese aren't the most flattering.
Like kind of one of, like, you kind of had to be there.
It tasted a lot like, it tasted just like Campbell's cream of tomato soup. Like light touch of cream.
Okay.
It didn't make me feel great afterwards. But he was like, really nice ramen noodles. So it was like, it was really close to something that I would eat, but I did have a little bit of a psychological hurdle. Though I grew up eating this stuff too when I was a kid. Okay. I have no food shame about this, at least.
Okay, good.
But highly recommend. National Book Award finalist, really acclaimed pen Bellwether Prize for Fiction Award winner, The Leavers. It's really good.
I'll have to borrow that. So thanks for that awesome recommendation. So now we are going to officially bring on our guests, Fabian and Jeremiah, and talk to them a little bit more about what they're reading, watching, or listening to, and then we'll dive into the very serious topic of their new cookbook. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Welcome, welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you. Hello. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Matt in the booth, can we get a little like clapping applause
sound?
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
It was a cat meow, but it was supposed to be people cheering.
Okay.
Normally, yes, but not right now. Sorry.
Okay.
Okay. Thank
we'll
you.
Do our own
thank
clapping.
Thank you. Jeremiah, Fabian, what are you reading? I know y'all are really busy doing the most, but what occupies your time late at night or when you're...
I mean, honestly, I wish I was reading more. We are so busy. I have zero commute because I live above the restaurant. So if I can read something going down two flights of stairs, and I don't have a TV or a computer, so I don't watch anything.
Do you listen to music?
Yeah, I listen to music.
Okay.
I don't really listen to new music, but I was in... I was in Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard this weekend, so I had some time to drive around with some friends, and I started listening to the new Travis Scott and the new Thrice album. Shout out to Thrice,
yep.
Our friends.
You think he's listening?
No, maybe.
Probably not.
Okay.
But they're great people.
Yeah.
I've been listening to this new album by Russ. This is all like, I'm sure everyone already listens to all this, but I don't listen to new music, so it's very...
This is your recommendation.
Yeah, I guess. I
mean, how do you get put on?
Yeah.
I mean,
or how do you find out
just
if you're not?
Hang around younger people, I guess, maybe. Just staff, just the internet, like what other people are listening to.
You're recommending the internet to
radio. If you guys
listeners.
Have not looked into the internet, check it out. There's things to read and listen to on there. It's new, no? It's less.
Relatively.
Yeah, that's what I've been listening to. How about you?
I've been listening to Thrice's new record as well. They're good friends, and I've loved them since I was 15. And recently, they started coming into the restaurants, and we became kind of close. So yeah, that's good. And I've been watching Maniac on Netflix.
Ooh.
The Jonah Hill, Emma Stone
yeah.
show. It's pretty good.
And Justin Theroux's on there, right?
Justin Theroux's.
Carrie Fukunaga.
Carrie.
Yeah.
Wait, I can't believe I messed up my recommend for this week.
That you love Carrie Fukunaga.
No, the Justin Theroux profile in the New York Times. Did you read it?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Then I was like, oh, I have to watch Maniac.
Yeah.
That's
so that'll be my one for the next week. It was a pretty interesting article.
Yeah. But yeah, that been watching that show. It's really good. And I've been rereading The Reef by Juan Villoro, who's a Mexican author.
Wow.
If you guys have a chance.
So cultured.
Is that fiction or?
It is fiction. Okay. It's about a guy who works at a like luxury resort in the Yucatan, where my dad's from, and it's just sort of like this whole resort where people get it, like rich people go, and the hotel pretends to be like drug lords or guerrillas to abduct them, so they feel like they're in like this sort of like really crazy place, and then just everything that goes on there. But it's pretty cool if you guys.
So, but they know that it's.
They don't know,
but it's part of the experience.
It is part of the experience.
So I just rewatched The Game with Michael Douglas, and that's what The Game is about.
The most dangerous game.
No, just The Game. You don't remember this movie? It's great. Oh. He basically his brother buys him a gift certificate to this company that creates all this havoc in his life. So people are getting like killed, and he thinks his life's falling apart, and someone stole his money, and then it's really just to shake him up so he like starts living his life. It's a terrible movie. I'm sorry.
Does he know that his brother got him this gift certificate?
No. So his okay. he he thinks that his brother wanted to get him this gift certificate or get him in, you know, involved in this thing called the game or whatever. But then because everything is so real, he thinks that the whole thing spirals out of control. But they're in control the whole time. At the very end, they all surprise him and say happy birthday. It's a terrible, terrible movie.
You just spoiled that movie.
It's a good movie.
I mean, like, you had 20-some years to watch it. I guess you haven't seen it since, you know.
I think that's a common conceit also, as yeah. far as.
There's like an expert. If you don't know the ending to Titanic, yeah, it's on yourself. They all die. Oh. One of them lives. Sorry.
No spoiler alert.
There was enough room on the door. I'm a door conspiracy theorist.
I don't have any strong feelings about it.
About the door?
Yeah, about
the
door,
whether Jack and Rose could
movie.
Fit on the door.
It's all good. So when do you find time, Fabian, to read? Like, what's your reading time?
When you're walking down two flights of stairs.
Well, I generally don't sleep that much. So, yeah.
Okay,
Between 1 to 4 in the morning, that's when I do my stuff.
I guess I'm sleeping usually.
Yeah.
Recommended sleeping.
Yeah. That's a different show. Cool.
Lucky. Yeah.
That'll be like a branch off show.
Yeah. Well, we need to take a very short break so that we can support Heritage Radio Network, our host for recommended reading. It is a member supported radio station. So we really ask you to head over to heritageradionetwork.org, become a member, do what you can, support our show and all the other amazing shows on the airwaves, heritageradionetwork.org.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Welcome back. This is Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. I'm Kimberly Chow.
I'm Amanda Dell.
We are the co-hosts of Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair, a show where we talk about what we're reading, watching, and listening to with friends and family of Food Book Fair, our festival that we co-direct, which is all about writing about eating. We are joined in the studio today with Jeremiah Stone and Fabian Van Husk. They are the chefs of Contra and Wild Air. They are the brand new authors of a book called A Very Serious Cookbook. Here they are to have a very serious conversation.
Welcome back.
We gotta make our own sound effects on the show. We gotta
keep. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Here we go. Someone must have donated during the commercial break. This is why we got that effect.
So it is super exciting because we have an actual copy of the book, and I understand there's far and few between until your official published date, which is October 15th.
That's correct.
Okay.
So so don't ruin that one.
We're not going to ruin
okay.
that one. But for folks listening in, you might want to pre-order.
Yeah.
They need to photocopy that one book.
It's okay, actually well,
a
zine.
Yeah, that's how they make
we
more.
We can do that here at the radio station for you. It's a full service operation here. Well, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
How exciting is it to see it like IRL in real life? I'm holding it up for everyone on the internet, and the boys are lovingly staring at it.
It's pretty crazy to see something we've been working on for like 2 years, you know, finally see it physically.
Okay. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that process as it relates to who you guys are and how you work? Because folks that know you and have eaten at and dined at your restaurants and love them know there are places where the menu changes all the time. Inspirations change. Things change. But a cookbook is where you have to at least codify some of it, at least for a moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of dishes that really sort of entitle or like really have a big meaning to what the restaurants are now. And you know, we've had staff that's been with us since we opened, and they were a big part of like how we wanted to put this book together. You know, we all sat down and we kind of like talked about the dishes that meant something for them and the dishes that meant something for us, and that's how we came up with this this book. There's like hundreds of dishes that someone said and we didn't remember, and like they were like, oh yeah, we did this dish, and we were like, no, we didn't, but we probably did. But yeah, I mean, these are like the ones that mean the most to us, and I think they exemplify what the two restaurants are and who we are.
So you kind of crowdsourced amongst your staff and other people that knew your dishes and your restaurants, and then kind of narrowed down from there.
Yeah, I mean, we asked some regulars, staff, and we kind of brainstormed between ourselves what were ones. I think we really relied on each other to kind of, you know, trigger what recipes really were stand out. And we change the menu so often. We come up, you know, we've done, you know, events all around the world, and kind of dishes come and go and they appear in different forms. And I think part of what we wanted to do with the book was not dwell so much on, you know, saying like a certain amount of dishes define the food that we make or who we are, but at the same time kind of draw, you know, paint a picture of what kind of food that we've been doing in the last couple of years. And so there's a lot of things that we'll probably never make again, and things that we always, you know, kind of go back to for ideas, and the kind of things that it really represents more like how we think and how we approach ingredients. Yeah.
Okay. And tell us a little more about the others that collaborated with you on this book. You have a co-writer, Allison Roman. You have Maddie Kim doing the photography alongside others, or there were people, others that contributed to the photography. Like, what was the concept from the beginning, and then how did it morph into what you have here?
I think we didn't really know what we were going to do in the beginning in terms of how to pick what recipes. And I think with working with Allison, who was doing her own, finishing her own book at the time that we kind of started ours, it was really helpful because she really understood kind of the structure of kind of, you know, what a book should look like. And that was like her first real, you know, full length book. And we use that as a, you know, as a guiding guide, like a guidebook to see, you know, how we can make something that appealed to both home cooks and, you know, chefs and people who know the restaurants. And, you know, we just started to throw recipes into a hat and then see how they photographed, and some things didn't make the cut, you know, and you know, we other things kind of, we realized made sense in terms of how it read and how the recipes came together and how the photos looked. So, you know, that if it was between that and another recipe, sometimes it was just about that, you know, how it looked and how it, and if it made sense in the context of, you know, the rest of the other recipes, like, so there wasn't too much overlap. And we decided to do the book in three parts, always, sometimes, and never. Always is a lot of recipes that are kind of timeless or don't really follow seasons, and things that we've had at Wild Air that, you know, have stayed on the menu a long time. Sometimes is more seasonal dishes that kind of stay on for, you know, let's say a few months or a few weeks, and then they come back in some form. And then never is some dishes that we've done at, you know, events, traveling, you know, guest chef dinners, or kind of things that we will do, you know, when we have such a limited, time of an ingredient, like something that's in season for a week or something like that.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, yeah, I think what makes the book very special, like you were talking about who we work with, Allison is someone we've known since we opened, and, you know, she's friends with a lot of friends of ours, and because we were in Aspen all together, and we went horse riding, and we just, like, asked her after that if she wanted to do the book.
Nice and then, setup.
Yeah.
That is a great
you
setup.
You really it romanced
is.
Her.
It is.
I'm impressed.
And Matty Kim, who took the photos of the book, he is this young, very talented kid who was graduating college at the time, and he is very interested in restaurants. He came to the restaurants a lot, even before we even thought about doing a book. So he really knew our food.
Yeah.
And that was a very important thing, to have someone that already knows your work and how, you know, it should be represented. He came to all the guest chef dinners we've ever done. He's always at the restaurants. And so I think working with those people really made for a beautiful book.
Yeah.
Cool. Did you research a lot of other cookbooks? Like, when you were kind of figuring out the look and feel of the book, was did you have a real sense of that in the beginning? Did you know what you didn't want to do? How did you kind of approach the aesthetic of the book?
I think we looked at everything except for cookbooks, because we didn't want to do a cookbook, you know, per se. Like, we sort of just, like, send each other images of designers we like, or just, like, different books. You know, I'm a huge fan of just your normal, like, novel, like, cover. Mm-hmm. Like, I really like, we both really like design, and we like things that are a little, you know, not just, like, recipes and, like, stories and text and text and text. So we really wanted it to be a very visual book, and that was where most of the inspiration came from, just, like, photos we like, designers we like, different things.
Is there, like, a contra Pinterest board that you share?
I don't know. Private.
Wow, this is really... Uh-oh, we've really struck a chord here. It's okay, you guys. You can admit to a Pinterest. It's okay.
Well, I mean, if I had a computer, I would have Pinterest, I'm sure. Yeah. But it's much more, you know, 1970. It's a cork board. We just clip out, you know, photos.
Yeah, we're really into collages.
I love it.
Where does that collage live?
On the internet. In a storage space in Yonkers.
Okay. Yeah. Can we visit it?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. Field trip.
But I remember actually how we first got to know each other and I became familiar with the restaurants was actually, I was really admiring the graphic design that y'all would do for your, for flyers for events. And then I would just DM whoever was like at Contra NY, and it was Fabian. And I'd be like, I love this graphic. Who made this?
You'd be like, I did.
Yeah, basically. But I think an eye for design and aesthetic is like something that really is clear in the work that you guys do. Can you talk a little bit more about specific inspirations and how that translates into putting a book together, or how that translates into a dish? Like, do you look at X? Do you look at a novel cover? Do you look at an album cover or a certain shade of green? And how does that compute in your mind, or how does that sort of filter through?
I mean, I think we always are, you know, we're always looking at different things, not necessarily like specifically for inspiration, but you know, pieces of design always catch our eye, whether it be a building or a piece of, you know, art or someone's, you know, album cover. But I think that those kind of things just kind of live in our minds, and you know, some things kind of inform the way we will design, like, let's say a flyer, or maybe it's something that it affects how we're designing, like a restaurant that we're building or something. But yeah, I mean, I think with the food itself, it's not that literal, where, you know, we're looking for something tangible to base the design of a dish on, but I'm sure it makes its way into dishes just kind of subconsciously, just looking at certain kind of designs and certain kind of movements and how that ends up, you know, informing the way that we plate dishes. But it's not, I don't think it's very, it's not at the top of my mind or Fabian's maybe.
I meant more like conceptually or like subliminal.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. And food is very hard to say how those inspirations come across. I mean, for me, you know, there's been times where we always make these flyers for Gesha dinners. And a lot of times I'm really into like, you know, punk rock flyers. And like, we've done like, we've been taking like Black Flag, you know, flyers and like switched them around, did something like that. And then we're really into like book covers and we'll do something more that looks like a textbook sort of thing. And that's just like on and off, like what we're really into. And we have very similar like tastes, even though we approach those things very differently. But we're always talking about, you know, different designs. I mean, I think music is one of our biggest inspirations. Mm-hmm. Just we always talk about music and, you know, album covers and all those things. And I mean, yeah, the book is a clear reflection of that. I don't know how to pinpoint it or say how specifically it was inspired, but we really wanted to do something that was slightly different. I think we've always wanted to do something that, you know, being very young, is you can really lose yourself into the inspiration of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've always like struggled and tried to push each other to achieve something that it's very unique to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having a conversation with someone makes it a lot easier than just you trying to figure out something unique for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the result of this book.
Mm. You said you had similar tastes.
Yeah.
But you came at it differently. Can you talk about that a little more? You guys might have different answers for each other.
Well, I mean, like, we were talking about Thrice. I think that's a perfect example. Like, I used to be in a hardcore band, and Thrice used to play hardcore music back in, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And that's how I got into it. And then they started changing their sort of, like, sound. And I guess, like, they're a Christian band. So a lot of their lyrics reflect religion, and Jeremiah is very into religion. And I guess there was that moment where that band connected with what he likes and what I liked. And so that's kind of a thing.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have very different kind of just like ways of going about discovering things, maybe. You know, like Fabian watches, like, you know, he'll be a lot more into different movies and television, kind of be the one who tells me to check things out. And I kind of like stumble upon different things just through, you know, random ways of just living my life and in a bubble. I think I live much more in a bubble. And then, so I don't always find things the way that he does. And like, and I think that applies to like design and different things too. Like, I don't always know who the names of the designers, or it sometimes is more through personal relationships, people who I know firsthand, you know, friends of friends or something like that. And that's maybe how I discover music as well.
Cool. So you guys are friends, which you talk about a lot in the book.
We're friends, I guess.
Business partners. You've written and, you know, produced a book together. This is a pretty intimate situation. You guys spend a lot of time together. What is your reasoning for why you work so well together? Like, how do you work, basically? Like, was there, when you were working on the book, would one of you handle like one aspect and the other handle, you know, the other? And is, you know, was everything that's in the book co-signed by both of you? And just walk us through that process a little bit.
I think no one else will really work with us. So
okay.
Yeah.
That's why.
So it's like a process of elimination.
You had to take Allison horseback riding before she said
Yeah, we got her super high and, you know, we gave her a bunch of edibles and then told her that, you know, that she should work with us, and she believed us.
Yeah. Do you guys kind of like pick your battles? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think a successful relationship is when you sort of acknowledge the other person's imperfections, and then you accept them. And the two of you just try to balance that out by just separating the things that you do better than the other one. And I think that we're very good at doing that. And I think that that's what makes it successful. You know, not to say that we don't argue or we don't have, you know, like different ways of thinking about something, but I think in the end, that's what makes it successful, that we just, I mean, there's a lot of compromise and we're not afraid to compromise in the things that, you know, there's very small things and then there's a bigger picture.
Right.
And I think we've always been very good at just focusing on the big picture and on like the little tiny things, day-to-day things.
Yeah, I mean, with the book, like, you know, Fabian does all the pastry, so he was able to get the recipes out, you know, very quickly and organized on that side and figure out which dessert items were going to go in the book. And, you know, I do a lot of the savory stuff, so that, like, I plated a lot of that. And then he's a little bit more adept at taking photos, so he really helped with a lot of the direction of just how the photos were actually being taken. And then I tried to you know, come up with different ways to change it up, so we didn't have, you know, so we had different textures and different, you know, ways of plating it. And we kind of just basically played off each other every time we shot photos or did recipes. Just one person kind of steered it and the other would contribute. And that's usually how we do things, yeah.
Cool. So when you had a deadline pressing, who was the one, like, texting me, like, are we going to turn this in? Where are you, Allison, with this? She was on both of you.
Yeah.
Okay, so absolutely. You had to answer to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, we always answer to Allison.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a good way to preserve your relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we are... Yeah, I mean, it's good there's two of us, but sometimes we both assume that the other is handling something. So things fall through the cracks sometimes. But when we were wrapping up the book, I mean, there were times where I couldn't really, you know, I was really busy with a menu item change or working, and Fabian would kind of handle an aspect of the shoot, or he would be away or doing something and I would try to take control of, you know, so we were able to kind of fill in the gaps and, yeah.
Awesome.
What was the writing process like? Did you write it with Allison? Did you guys take passes at it?
So in the book, there's a lot of conversation pieces, and that was more of when Jeremiah, Allison, myself, we sat together and we were just talking about things, and that just that is in the book as a pure conversation. Like, if I say something, it'll be F, and if Jeremiah says something, it'll be J. And then there were pieces that were very important to us, like for us to write. So there's a couple of essays that we wrote ourselves, and we gave it to Allison, and she made them better.
She made everything spelled correctly.
Yeah, but I think that was pretty much how we did it. We traveled a bit, and Allison helped us like write those experiences into the book, and yeah.
Because I was going to ask you what it's like to write about, you know, to tell the story of you. In the beginning, where you talk about this is the story of your friendship, your partnership, and how to write that, and how to make it formalized in a book, and also be writing it with another person that's outside of your relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I think like we spent a lot of time with Allison and Maddie, and just kind of allowed them to live in our world for a bit, and so she really was able to pick up kind of the, you know, the relationship and the rapport that we had with each other. And then just talking about ourselves, I think we've just, because we've spent so much time together, we know, you know, we know everything about how each other thinks, and that is just easy. That comes out pretty easily. I think we've done a lot of events and open restaurants together and spent a lot of time. So talking about each other and kind of, you know, if we're not able to talk about ourselves, like allowing the other person, we read each other's, you know, all everything we would write, we would kind of hand to each other and say, does this sound like me? Does it sound like, you know, something that makes sense? And even with the recipes, like, are they, did they represent, you know, us as a whole? So, yeah.
How did you meet? And what was your first collaboration?
We met at FCI back in 2007, 2008. French Culinary Institute. Jeremiah was working there, and I was a student. at the time.
Scandalous.
And
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. And, now we're really getting into it.
Yeah,
Amanda. Easy.
We did a lot of events together, and I would just every living second that I had outside of school, I would spend at the school working with whatever there was available. And Jeremiah ran the events program, so they always had like stuff to do. So I would always hang out there with him and our friend Jeremy, and that's how.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's how love blossoms. Yeah. Yeah, we met, and you know, Fabian was working a lot with Dave Arnold, another radio host. He you know, I think the relationship kind of started from you know, being in the same room together, and then it turned into kind of sharing some of the same ideas and looking at things in a similar way, and then you know, we both moved to Europe at the same time, and that's when we really started to kind of talk about, you know, what our future plans were, and that ended up being opening Contra.
Right.
Yeah.
So what made you both want to come back to New York and open here, and for the moment make your home here? Like, you were both totally on board with that decision.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, for me personally, I mean, I just... I've always imagined just staying in New York. And then when, you know, I had a possible opportunity to open a place in Paris, and I, you know, was talking to, you know, some people about that. But then I think really what drew me back to coming back to New York to open was just being able to cook for, you know, all sorts of people, just friends and family that live here, that visit. And you know, I think in the book we talk a lot about relationships, and I think that's such a big part of the restaurants, is the people that have influenced us and also just have been able to come, and we've been able to share what we've been doing. And that is, for me, what's different with having a restaurant in New York and anywhere else, is just the amount of people that you'll see from all around the world and through different parts of your life, just, you know, dropping in and, hey, I'll be in New York for a week, and, you know, being able to try one or all of your restaurants. And I think that's a big difference from a lot of other places.
Yeah, I mean, I think we just found ourselves, like, we were at a time where everyone we knew in the industry was here, so it just made sense to come back and cook for all these lovely people in this lovely city.
Yeah. From what I hear, it's pretty hard to be an owner-operator in New York.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really hard, but, you know, there's a lot of reward, too. And I think that, you know, it's great to have another city to go to and flourish and really, you know, find your way, especially if you're from there. But I guess for us, we always just... I mean, I always imagine just being in New York and getting to... kind of be a part of history of all the other amazing restaurants that have been in New York, the other chefs that have, you know, worked here and continue to operate here. And, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of problems with it, but there's a lot of great things as well. Yeah. Trash, cool. Trash on the street and people, you know, smashing your windows and yeah. But I mean, there's problems everywhere. So, you know, we're used to the ones that happen here, I guess.
How do you guys problem solve? Like, what's your biggest challenge being an operator? Like, what is the hardest thing?
I think just being able to blur the noise and really focus on the things that are in front of you. I think we're still 5 years in, we're attacked with problems, and, you know, there are truly months and, you know, little stages in the year that we're literally probably 90% of the problems happen within that time. And I think it's just really important to, you know, sort of sit down and think about it and just really think about what the solution is. For me, I think that's the biggest problem, just to be able not to overstress about things and think with clarity.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what that goes along with having, you know, with big with the rewards that are seen being in New York, you know, you also come across problems that you probably don't have to deal with in other places. But I think that we, it's good to kind of remember like what has happened before, so you keep track and you know you don't think everything is like, oh, this is a new issue. Like, you know, talking to friends who've operated for 10-15, you know, we have a lot of friends in our area who, you know, own Russ and Daughters and Peter Luger institutions that have been around for 100 plus years, and kind of being able to have like a bigger vision than just you know, the day-to-day. And we listen to a lot of people who know more than us, and we spend a lot of time with owner operators who are more experienced and who've been able to take those kind of patterns in their life and make informed decisions and persevere through it.
Cool. You guys will write your business book next, right? The partnership business book.
Yeah, we're amazing at it.
But it's nice to hear that you feel as if you're always learning.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that, you know, there's so many things that come your way that are new, and there's so many things that kind of just, if you think about it, you're like, oh yeah, we really dealt with this. This is just like on a different scale. And, you know, like Fabian was saying, it's important to kind of just be able to not be reactionary. And I think that, you know, the difficulties of running a place in New York, like it seems like it's new. It seems like it's something that only you're going through, but, you know, that's why we spend time with other people and try and pick the brains of other chefs and restaurateurs that we know and say, have you ever dealt with this, or you ever experienced this, and try to grow from that.
Cool. Speaking of growing, are you guys kind of good with your growing empire right now, or things bubbling on the horizon?
Yeah, we have a couple of little ideas, some things that are probably going to happen soon. You know, we're not looking to get bigger and bigger, just,
right.
You know, we always have ideas, I think, just as creative people, and so, right. We're always looking at different options and ideas out there, and we're working on a wine shop on the Lower East Side that's going to be sometime next year. So,
yeah,
cool. We love wine.
Yeah,
I know you guys do too.
We talk a little bit about it in the book, and also just in the restaurants, it's food and wine just go so hand in hand that, you know, I think for us it's a big part of the culture of eating and how our food takes shape, and so we wanted to do something that was connected to that, and kind of move into this retail space that we can use our brains in a different way.
Yeah. Sweet. Well, it's kind of close to my hood, so I will look forward to shopping there.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll deliver as well. So,
you don't even need to see me.
Only door-to-door service for Amanda Dell. As you guys are getting ready to go on book tour, what's your walkout music?
Walkout music? I don't know. I mean, I think we're going to be traveling a lot and doing a bunch of dinners, and we'll probably end up discovering some new music. Probably be listening to the new Thrice Elf.
Yeah.
Cue it up as you're walking out of the dugout.
Yeah, I like the flute song. It's called the flute song, and it's got like a Scott Storch did the production. It's got a kind of like a flute in it, and it's like that's good walkout music. Flute song, yeah.
Flute song.
Yeah. Both of y'all?
I guess so. Yeah.
Why not? He doesn't know it. He'll
your
have to.
Team. You gotta. I mean, you can pick two, but if you're in it together,
yeah,
we're gonna put the flute song on record.
We're going on. Yeah. For the flute song.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's been good. Fun.
Great. And you'll be signing at our tent at the Union Square Green Market in a couple weeks.
Yep. Just come by, say hi. What is it, Saturday?
It's a Saturday.
Yeah.
It's October 20th.
No.
No.
No, it's the
It's the 13th.
None of us know.
13th.
We'll be there.
It's the 13th.
We'll be there. Just kidding.
It's Saturday, October 13th. It's going to be a beautiful fall day.
It's not going to rain. Yeah.
It's not going to rain. It's your first chance to get your hands on the book.
We have
before release day.
Yeah. We'll have a very serious stack of a very serious cookbook. And maybe we'll get a taste from inside the book, too.
Yeah. We'll be there signing. And if you speak Spanish, Fabian will sign it in Spanish.
Hmm.
He'll write his name with like accent marks.
Yep.
So. Something to look forward to.
That's a special request.
Very special.
Yeah. Cool.
Thanks, Chef.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show. Congrats again. And we will see you at the Green Market on October 13th.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world, or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.